Welcome to the Women in Public Policy Program Seminar Series Podcast at the Harvard Kennedy School.
Okay, let's go ahead and get started. My name is Hannah Riley Bowles, and one of my primary roles at WAF is I get to host this terrific seminar. So at the Women in Public Policy Program, we are committed to closing gender gaps in the areas of economic opportunity, political participation, health and education. I check my notes every time. Our aspirations are so broad. but the contribution of this seminar toward that very broad mission is to connect cutting-edge researchers with folks who are active, conducting research and promoting women's leadership advancement and interested in gender and public policy. And in order to create a constructive space for the development and sharing of new ideas. Before we get started, there are a couple things I'd like to highlight before I get to introduce our speaker that we're very excited about today. One is that today is Rosh Hashanah, which is the Jewish New Year, an important holiday. And as a result, there are a number of people who sent their regrets. So there are a number of people who couldn't be here today. And so we want to wish them a happy new year in their absence. But we also want to highlight what will be available to them is a podcast of the program. And so one of the things before we get started, I'd like you to imagine yourself not only just in this small seminar room, but also in a virtual community of folks who will listen to the seminar. So the seminar has been now downloaded more than 28,000 times. So it's actually a broad community of listeners. And so our norms are twofold. One, we're obviously going to turn off cell phones and any other sound distractions that would make it hard to listen in for those in the room or outside. And the second is that we try to keep the conversation focused so that when we ask questions, we're actually asking questions and they relate to the subject matter being presented. So pretty low bar, but we like to stick to it. Okay, so with that business taken care of, I'd like to turn to introduce our speaker today, Jia Shua, who is a PhD candidate in social welfare at the University of Pennsylvania, as well as adjunct faculty at Smith College and Rutgers University, and a fellow in the Women in Public Policy program. And Gia's really inspiring research is motivated by promoting social justice and improving the well-being of vulnerable individuals and families who are affected by intimate violence. So her research is focused on intimate violence, dating violence in young adulthood, child abuse, gender-based violence in international and cross-cultural contexts. And she is one of these people who has a real commitment to rigorous research, but also high aspirations to affect the world of progress. So a perfect WAP seminar speaker. Please join me and welcome me.
Everyone, thanks Hannah for the fabulous introduction. And my name is Gia. I'm a PhD candidate at University of Pennsylvania in the PhD program on social welfare. And for some schools, it's called social work. And I'm also a research fellow at the Carr Center for Human Rights last year in Kennedy School. So it's my second year in the Kennedy School. And I've been here for the WAP seminars almost every week for a whole year. And then, so I'm really familiar with this place. However, Siri just asked me, oh, have you ever presented this talk before in other places? The answer is no. This is freshly made slice this week. So you are the first audience of this talk, the whole story, and also my new project is under review, under resubmission status. So we just resubmitted the article the end of August. So nobody has heard about my presentation for today's everything before. Okay. So I was born in China, Beijing, the capital. And I spent more than 20 years in China and almost more than six years here in the US. So 7 years ago, I was a student at a law school. And I was making the rounds of faculty and law firms, trying to find a place to take my summer internship. And until the end of June, 2010, almost all my classmates find a place to have their internship. I didn't. It's not because I'm not good, I'm not well educated or not qualified to find an internship. It just, I cannot find a really good topic. I'm not interested in like other people's like fascinated about like for a law firms, they want to go to courts. I'm interested in criminology, but not about like robbery, other kind of crime. So I have no idea where to go. I have no clue about my future. And one day I was working in the library, law library in the school, and then I saw a post. And she is the poster, and she is like the PI on the post. She's asking for Chinese law school student for research assistant for two international projects. The first one is sexual assault in workplace, and second is domestic violence in China. I found this very special because as a law school student for almost 3 years of education, I rarely heard about. Hi, Camry. That's my supervisor last year. And so I rather heard about domestic violence cases in the classroom. And it's, domestic violence is like among the list of like topics in law school, especially for my law school. And I found it special. So I sent email to her, Nancy. She used to be assistant professor at the Georgetown Law Center, but now she moved to Barry University in Florida. And I didn't expect, because that email produced short-term and long-term unexpected results. First, I got internship. She hired me to be a research assistant. I had a great summer with her and her students, 20 students from Georgetown Law School. And I get to know, open my eye about this field by interview nonprofit organization, advocates, lawyers who are have been working in domestic violence for like more than 10 years. And second, I think I was so fascinated by the challenge of doing advocacy in the field of domestic violence in China. And then, so the long term is I never realized that internship changed like my life, changed my career. From that time, I think I was so in love with this topic. I was so sure that I want to take this as my career in my whole life. And this is my advisor now, Richard Dallas. And then as anyone came into the field of domestic violence, violence against women, or gender-based violence, so the emotion aspect of seeing and talking to victims is heartbreaking. And also the challenges of trying to find meaningful solutions to help victims is frustrating. And also the indifferences of policy makers to the tragedy is infuriating. And also conducting research, good quality research, and is continue to be challenging. So back to 7 years ago, I found it's really frustrating to just talk to victims all the time and has no solution, no clue, because there was no national domestic violence law back to 7 years ago. And after my internship, and then I took an internship at China Supreme Court, and I met another advisor, Chen Min, and they all encouraged me to seek an advanced like research-oriented program and in the US. They told me you can seek solutions by doing research. And as a law school student, I don't do research at all. And I took the advice and applied to universities in the US. And then graduated from law school, I got the offer from University of Pennsylvania and get into the PhD program of social welfare and started my studies at UPenn. And then during my study, I'm interested in using advanced statistic approach to solve the social problem. So I took another degree in Wharton School of Stats. And then last year I got a degree and also got an offer from Carl Center. Because I first applied to WAP, but I didn't get the offer. Because Sarah was on sabbatical. But my supervisor, Catherine, she's hiding there. She kindly gave an offer, so I'm lucky to come here last year and be a fellow at Car Center. So I spent a wonderful year there. And then, this year I continue to be a fellow, take another fellowship here at WAP, and then to continue my research. So my education and research has been interdisciplinary and cross-cultural. So today's agenda, I'm going to focus on four aspects. The first is my research trajectory, and also briefly mention several of my current projects. I think some of them are really interesting, and maybe we can looking forward to your comments, feedback, and look for potential collaborations. And also offer research methods and results of an example of the current project, which investigates the use of social media, like the Chinese version of Twitter, Weibo, to examine the effect of domestic violence on mental health. And also briefly mention my future research directions. So her name is Shanshan Dong Shanshan. She was born in 1983. And when she was 26 years old, she got married to this guy, Guang Yu Wang. And when she got married, she said, "I was so lucky. I feel I'm being protected by this man because she looks physically strong than me, because he's so bigger than her." But this marriage has no happy ending. She died after 10 months of marriage. During a short term of 10 months marriage, her husband beat her severely and persistently. She tried to call the police at least 8 times, but the police told her, "It's a family matter. We cannot use public force to interview a family." It was happening in 2008. And she died after 10 months of marriage. Her name is Kim. She is American, but she married a Chinese man. And her husband is very famous. It's called Li Yang. Many Chinese students here know about her. He's so famous. He's a famous English teacher, teaching Chinese students how to speak English, to breathe, to speak out, and then to speak. Don't afraid to lose face in front of public to speak English. And one day, no one knows who she is, even she is the wife of Li Yang. No one knows who she is until she posted her injured head pictures on one of the Chinese social media platform, Weibo, the Chinese version of Twitter. I'm going to use Weibo a lot of time today. So Weibo, and within an hour of the post, it's 2011. And then it has been retweeted more than 10,000 of times and received comments of almost 4,000 of comments just within an hour of the post. And she also mentioned in her post, she reported to the police. But the police said, it's private family matter and we don't know what to do. There's no law to tell us what to do. And she decided to speak out on the Weibo. And with the help of the activists or strangers from the social media, she filed a divorce based on the grounds of domestic violence. And she won, even this takes several years, but she got compensation because of her abuse history. And her case is a landmark from Chinese history of fighting to have a legislation for domestic violence in the history. And it has been reported on the news, New York Times, Daily Post, Washington Post, a lot of times. So it's become an international famous case in China's domestic violence history. So these two cases are similar. They're all like wife-beating cases, but they have totally different results. Many, many factors, many reasons cause the difference. Kim is American, and it's cross-cultural marriage, so it's received more attention. Or her husband is famous, so it's also attract more attention by the public. But one difference is the use of social media to expose, to speak out their domestic violence cases. Back to Shanshan's case, the first case, it's what happened It happened in 2008. But for Kim's case in 2011, there was no Twitter. There's no Weibo, Chinese version of Twitter, in 2008. But 2 years later, Weibo was established. And it's keep growing fast in 2 years and reached its golden age in 2011. And one reason could be the reason of social media, because Kim chose to speak out on social media. So what's the uniqueness of social media? And the public used to be information receiver, and they heavily rely on the mass media to tell them what issues are important and what to think about. But with the growth of social media, the information receiver transferred to information creator. They post their opinions, their ideology on the internet, on social media, and they tell the public, they tell the government, the media, what things they think are important, should need attention, should be put on the agenda, policy agenda. So the social media changed the public from information receiver to information creator. And the growth of social media to China. So social media grow fast in the world, worldwide, and China is no exception. So among all international user, internet users worldwide, more than half are Chinese, about 700 million. And China has the most mobile phone users with, in the world, with almost 90% of the population have a mobile phone right now. And 1/3 of total Chinese population have access to social media platforms. And Weibo, I just mentioned many times, is a leading Chinese online social network. And this is a screenshot of an example of the Weibo. It's more like a combination about Facebook and Twitter. It has function of like how many followers, how many followees, how many posts, and her pictures, and also her connections, and more information about the personal profile, like where is the residence, living residence, the age, the gender, and her habits, and the places, the check-in, the places the person has been to. So more functions than Twitter. And this map shows the population, the social media usage to the population of the countries. For example, the Weibo, the number is equals to the population of Japan. But the new data shows Weibo has more than 600 million, but this map shows 120 million. So it's keep growing, and it's already exceeded the population of Japan. And the, all social media platforms are growing, and WeChat, there's no map, there's no population match for the for that map, but WeChat is another population, social media platform, especially on mobile phone by Chinese people. And intimate partner violence. So in the US, many terms has been used to describe this phenomenon, like wife abuse, wife beating, family violence, domestic violence, and then, or violence against women, and then use intimate partner violence. In contrast, in China, the word, the term, terminology, domestic violence is dominantly used to describe this phenomenon. And the, in the US, the IPV, actually the IPV includes physical violence, sexual violence, psychological violence, or even stalking. It can happen among current or former intimate partner, partner among heterosexual or same-sex couples. Based on law of, based on the law of China, domestic violence law now, so it's more focused on the physical harm of the violence against family members. So the law includes the partners cohabit together, but not for dating, or like former, not including same-sex couples, not including former intimate partner. And for all...
So would that include children as well in China against family members?
Yeah, for domestic violence,
yes.
The law including child abuse.
Okay.
But when we like talk about this, we often separate intimate partner violence as when we talk about domestic violence, we always refer to as intimate partner violence, and we use child abuse to refer to the phenomenon of child maltreatment.
Just a quick question. So regular abuse, so to speak, against people who are not outside of the family, that's illegal, right, and comparable to the U.S. Like, it's not that the laws are more lax in general. It's specific to the family context, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And IPV is a serious social problem worldwide. And based on the National Intimate Partner Violence and Sexual Violence Survey in 2011, and almost 25.6% of women, including married or non-married, at least experience one form of physical IPV in their lifetime, could be physical violence, severe physical violence, psychological violence, rape, or other sexual violence than rape or stalking. And also have stats for men. Almost 28.5% of men have been experienced at least one form of this kind of IPV in their lifetime. In contrast, in China, there's no nationally representative survey to these phenomena of prevalence of IPV. And based on the report of All China Women's Federation, they released a report among all to test investigate the prevalence of marital violence. It's third, one third of women, married women, have experience of IPV in their lifetime. And other research, and one of my committee member Chen, he has done a lot of research in China about the prevalence, and that's his student there, and it shows a big variation about the prevalence in China because different studies use different instruments with different samples, and so it's caused big variations when we test the prevalence of the IPV in China. But when we talk about the prevalence, we always use like one third of married women have experience of IPV released by All Women's Federation. This map shows the policymaking stages of IPV in the U.S. and China. So this map shows, we can see there's a 20-year lag in terms of legislation between the U.S. and China. So in 1994, when the U.S. passed the first federal legislation of Violence Against Women Act in 1994, there was no domestic violence law in China. And at that time, the first UN World Conference on Women in Beijing was held. And from that time, the whole society realized domestic violence is a serious problem. So it needs our attention. And many advocates start to do advocacy work back to that time. And also research grows in 1995 after the conference. So this conference has a big influence, a big impact in terms of the policy making in China. And in 2000, the first provincial regulation against domestic violence is released. It's in Hunan province. And then in 2001, the reform of marriage law, it is the first time in the history that in the national level law, the law mentioned domestic violence, this word. So there's one clause that domestic violence is forbidden, just one clause. And then after many years of advocacy, lawyers' work, and research, so the National Domestic Violence Law, the draft passed in 2015, and the law started to be implemented in the March of 2016, so last year. And we can see the difference between the U.S. and China, and the VAWA has been reauthorized in 2000, 2005, and then 2013, to trying to provide services to almost all victims of domestic violence, including LGBT community. And you can see in the 1970s, the movement, women's movements start the whole process, and that's a big impact. But there's no movement here to have an impact for the policy making of IPV in China. So that's also another difference. So based on what I talked and So I'm motivated to, so my research lies at the intersection of violence, social media, and also intervention. So violence is my research areas, my research topic, and social media is, I'm motivated by the growth of social media and its impact for the field of intimate violence. And also I'm really fascinated by using computational big data approaches to examine intimate violence. And also I'm interested to learn how to implement internet-based or mobile phone-based or social media-based intervention to address intimate violence. In one of my previous publications, we investigate the contents analysis of all the agency. We systematically sampling 10% of the agencies in the US serving abused women, and to see if they have the website and their, if their website has linked to social media. And we found out almost 50 of the sampled agencies, they have social media links on their website. And almost a fourth, a quarter of them use Twitter to do advocacy. So I think it's a promising field to, for advocacy organizations to employ social media to do intervention. And the results is, the goal is